Tell me when you first became interested in Scots.
Well, I was interested in the fact when I went to school that the language we were supposed to speak in the classroom was different from what we spoke at home, because I lived in a house where my grandparents were still present, and we really spoke nothing else at home. Also, there's a distinction in the playground in which the children, where I went to school in Galashiels, used the numerals 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and the numerals that we got at school. So it was a very puzzling situation. So this certainly has, in my view, in retrospect, a very bad psychological effect, because the what is happening is that the child is being told that the way its parents speak and its grandparents speak is wrong, something that has to be corrected. And I think that this impact has got a lot to do in later life with people in Scotland on what is often known as the Scottish cringe, a sort of feeling that somehow there is something wrong with them that has to be corrected. And if people get this impression at a very early age, it can become persistent and you know, affect them for the rest of their lives. I was also interested in the fact that I was in contact with people of older generations, and that my great granny, who was born in 1840, spoke nothing else but Scots, and that Scots really sounded quite, in a sense, quite lofty compared with what Scots is now presented to us.
So were you encouraged to speak Scots in a home environment when you were young?
Oh yes, well I didn't really speak anything else. Though of course, even then, of course, Scots was suffering erosion from the fact that we'd had this system of education where it was presented as an incorrect form of English for hundreds of years, for many generations. But despite the fact that the impact of English was huge, you know, it was used in the Bible and in education, the structure of the language was still not intact, but at least it was still it was still substantial Scots that was spoken. Every generation, of course, more and more words disappeared. But that's the thing that interested me. But of course, I didn't. That has not been my career. My career has been as a biochemist. But in my later years, of course, I have sort of returned, you know, to my earlier interests.
Did you do Scottish literature at school? Kind of have the impression that you get the occasional bit of Burns and
We had the headmaster was English, and he sort of took the view that, that somehow or other contradictory view that it was worthwhile to teach Scots songs. But anyone that used it in the classroom was sort of guilty of some sort of impertinence. Every year there would be a E. Burns prize, usually given to some boy that could recite Tam O'Shanter. We didn't really, we're not really aware that there was any literature in Scots apart from the work of Burns.
Do you think Scots would benefit from having a more official place in the school curriculum then?
Well, my own view is that it should be taught as a separate linguistic system, closely related to English, it should not be represented as something which is inherently wrong. You cannot think that it is reasonable to regard a Scots word like Drich, for example, as being somehow wrong. Many Scots words are brought across the North Sea by our ancestors a long time ago. It's wrong to sort of see certain modes of speech as wrong. Certainly, there is a difficulty in that forms of speech, and Scots often comes into this category, often become very unpopular, and they become seen as wrong because they are associated with social deprivation.
Yeah. Do you think that's particularly the case with urban varieties rather than rural
varieties? Yes, that has happened in urban situations where people often hold on to some of their Scots. I mean, it even comes across in a series like River City.
Yes, of course.
Where there is some Scots spoken, very often the broadest Scots is spoken by the most socially deprived people in the series. So this is raises the question of whether there is such a thing as good or bad Scots.
Yeah, yeah.
In my view, you can escape seeing certain kinds of speech as being bad if they are traditionally associated with social deprivation, drug addiction, crime. It's a terrible thing that should happen, but that is the case. So that if I'm asked the question, is there such a thing as bad Scots, I would say, well, that is in the nature of language. A thing does become bad when it acquires bad associations. But linguistically, of course, nothing is either bad or good.
Indeed.
Independently.
Arguably, Do you think that can be balanced by encouraging writing in Scots to improve its public face, if you like?
Well, there's a substantial body of literature.
Oh, indeed. I meant really in the current day.
Of course, the number of people that can
past.
Write in anything which resembles authentic Scots is diminishing day by day. I mean, that's a fact of the matter. But the obvious way to teach any language is in relation to the literature that exists in it. And Scots has a substantial body of literature, perhaps inadequate. Nevertheless, it's just quite substantial if you go back to the time of the medieval markers. Of course, there's a logistic difficulty in that fewer and fewer teachers may be sufficiently familiar with it to be able to teach it. But that should be the objective, is to acquaint children with the literature that exists in Scots and convince them that there is nothing inherently wrong about this, the language has got unrealised powers of expression. It has been greatly neglected, and the idea has been put across that somehow Scots is inherently bad. And I would certainly deny that there's anything inherently bad about any language, although a language can become bad in the sense of its arousing distaste because it's associated with social deprivation, which nobody wants that. Everybody sees social deprivation, crime and drug addiction as bad. There's a little semantic difficulty here when we speak about good and bad Scots.
Perhaps we can move on to the subject of Lallans magazine. You told me before that you edited for a number of years.
Yes, I did. The Lallans magazine, I think, is really quite important because over the years, it has included quite a lot of what I regard as quite fine poetry, it is very valuable. And I think that the corpus of writing represented by Lallans is a very good basis for teaching the language.
Yes, absolutely. How did it come about? You said to me earlier it started in the early 1970s, 1972 probably. Do you know what motivated the beginning of Lallans? Did it arise out of another project?
It was it arose as the magazine of the what was originally known as the Learned Society. Uh-huh. Its name was changed from the Learned Society to the Scottish Language Society because as somebody, Tom Scott, I think it was, objected to the terms Lerlands, and it didn't sort of is, it didn't make any difference when it was changed to the Scottish Language Society. It was still opposed to the organisation for some reason which I never discovered. But it started off in a very modest way as the original numbers were simply cyclostyled sheets, and then it gradually became bigger and bigger, and I found it very, very rewarding exercise to edit it, though I must say editing anything doesn't lead to personal popularity.
Of course.
Nobody likes to have their material rejected.
Yes, of course. We were talking earlier about the issue of spelling variation as well, and it's one that's, well, controversial and very a real problem. What are your views on that?
Well, my views are that that is something that our educational system should take care of, and that if there is to be a, as I understand it, this is going to happen, that there is to be a national languages strategy, that this ought to involve the teaching of Scots at school based on the existing body of literature, and that the spelling is an important aspect of teaching. At the moment, when people want to know how to spell a Scottish word, they usually go to a dictionary.
Yes.
But of course, most of the dictionaries that are available can quote a number of possible spellings for every word. Mm-hmm. And this is the object of spelling reform should be to tidy up this state of affairs.
Mm-hmm.
It's not unique, of course. It used to exist in English if we go far enough back.
Yeah.
But once official documents begin to be spelt in a certain way, then that helps. But of course, we cannot hope for any improvement until the image of Scots as being somehow inherently bad and something which is associated with ignorant and uneducated people, until that image is dispelled, isn't possible to make any progress at all. It's very, very difficult to see a way forward in this situation in the face of the process of globalisation, which affects the whole planet.
Increasing world of English.
We've now got English is now taking over all over the world as a means of communication, and it has been argued by some artists that, of course, English is no longer a language in which it's possible to write poetry because it's lost its soul. It's become a computer language, or an airport language.
But it's a language with lots of varieties and new varieties developing.
Huge varieties, as well. But of course, it is no longer the language of any specific community. So this is rather important. Mm. In Shakespeare's time, English was very much the language of a specific community. Now it's spoken all over the world, and therefore you get it doesn't have the same community association as a language which is associated with an existing community.
Yeah.
Globalization tends to lead to the disappearance of communities is a very serious development, because the civilization is really based on community spirit and on trust. It's with the disappearance of communities, you're no longer, if you no longer identify with a community, you feel you're in a situation where you cannot trust anybody, because you trust other people very often by the way they speak.
Yeah.
I mean, you can recognize an identity from hearing the way somebody else speaks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a sort of big question, of course.
Mm-hmm. Do you see this as a problem with no solution or with an inevitable ending? Or do you think there are ways of encouraging Scots to a sufficient degree that it won't lose out completely to English?
Well, there isn't any solution in the sense that everybody in Scotland mm-hmm. is going to sort of return to speaking the same way as my grandfather. You know, that's mm-hmm. not going, uh-huh. going to happen.
Yeah.
We can sort of see that that is not possible.
Mm-hmm.
But people in Scotland, if we are a community in Scotland, are entitled to have the language which was originally the state language of Scotland
mm-hmm.
treated with respect in education. There is a sort of the idea that somehow there is a proper way to speak and the other ways of speaking which don't conform to this image are improper.
Uh-huh.
That is really, I certainly hope that is going to disappear altogether.
Mm-hmm.
Though I don't think there's a solution in the sense that I am going to return to a Scotland where everybody speaks
mm-hmm.
the same way as they did when I was a child.
Mm-hmm.
But the literature is still there.
Yes.
And that is the beauty of literature
yeah.
and recorded material, that we can still access
mm-hmm.
material which is not really universal in the age in which we live.
Yeah, yes. How do you feel about Scottish literature at the moment? Do you feel it's an encouraging situation? For example, over the last 20 years, have you seen an improved place for recognition of Scottish literature?
Well, I should really rather reserve judgment about that, because it really depends what you mean by literature. If you mean
right.
everything that is written, you know,
mm-hmm.
I don't think the present situation is very encouraging. That we have... then, of course, I'm probably speaking from the standpoint of the time in which I have lived.
Uh-huh.
The fact that I regret that we don't have many Robert Louis Stevensons around,
mm-hmm.
It's inevitable that things should change, and that people should feel that the changes which are occurring in society are bad, because they are different from the time that they have experienced within their own life. So I think it would be presumptuous of me to try to pass judgment on what is being written currently. There is now seems to be a rather unpleasant preoccupation with violence and crime. But there has always been violence and there's always been crime. That's just my impression.
Does that encourage a negative image for Scots, do you think?
For Scots?
Yes.
Well, there are different images, you see.
Mm.
We have the Gonna No Day, that lavatorial humour image.
Uh-huh.
And then we've got the view of people that appreciate the dialogue in
mm-hmm.
maybe Sir Walter Scott's novels, even Stevenson, McDermott. There are people that can see great beauty
mm-hmm.
In work written in this language, because the very fact that it is different from English
uh-huh.
enables the writer to sort of reach parts which
yes.
English cannot really reach.
Yeah. That maybe ties in with something you were saying earlier about Chinese poetry. Do you think there's an affinity between, well, obviously not a small language, but another language, a more exotic language compared to English and Scots?
That is very difficult, because I cannot read the Chinese script directly.
Right.
And my access to it is through translations into English.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, these translations vary enormously in quality.
Mm.
If the translation had been made by a Victorian Englishman,
yeah.
the Chinese poems sometimes have an almost Victorian quality. But nevertheless, I sort of feel that in reading some of these English translations, I can sort of reach back into the psyche of the original author, although the author may have been dead for a couple of thousand years. We can sort of reach, make contact. It's almost like a spiritualistic experience. And that, of course, by using Scots to represent this man's poem, somehow you achieve a kind of contact with him that is really quite remarkable.
How do you proceed then? Do you work with parallel versions of translations into English of the poem and try to sort of use one, consider one against the background of the others to get
I don't do that. I read through collections of renderings of Chinese poems by different people, and then when I hit one I think will go well in the Scots, I sort of try it out.
Right.
Of course, the result is often quite different from the English translation, but nevertheless I get the feeling that I know what the original author is trying to say, although the English is, exists in between. But the translations of poetry from another language are a different kind of exercise from simply trying to sort of reproduce the meaning as it appears on the page. It has to be a recreation, because of the different social background of the original author and the translator. Nevertheless, it does sort of provide a bond with people that lived thousands of years ago. It's fascinating.
Do you find themes in common when in looking at the very old material? Do you find things that are still relevant?
Yes. Well, there are some tremendous Chinese poems about the pain of grief and bereavement. These things are dealt with in a very direct way, and they're not really greatly concerned with abstractions.
Right.
The trouble is that the contemporary Chinese very often tend to sort of look with disdain on this nebulous tradition. It doesn't appear to them to be nearly materialistic enough, but that's another another question.
Yeah, I imagine the directness would translate quite nicely into Scots.
Which not one?
The directness of the
sentiment. Yes, I think. Well, there is a man called Harvey Holton that translated the whole of the water margin into Scots.
Right.
Reading his translations into Scots, the situation becomes curiously alive, you know, with folk being thrown into the jail, and it is possible to share the vision of the author. I haven't seen these for a while. There are two brothers, both from Selkirk. There's a Harvey Holton who writes poems in Scots, and there's Brian Holton that translated The Water Margin into Scots.
What are your views on the new Scots Parliament as it relates to the language? Do you think it goes far enough in encouraging Scots?
It hasn't gone very far so far. It's really done very. There was a national cultural strategy years ago, which was produced, but it didn't really have hardly any specific proposals in this. There now appears to be a commitment to a national languages strategy, which raises the whole question of how important Scotland's indigenous languages, that are Scots and Gaelic, are in education and in broadcasting. Unfortunately, the Scottish Parliament doesn't have any control over broadcasting or any way of directly influencing what is broadcast. Yeah. There's no drama in Scots to speak of apart from River City, and I am actually quite thankful for the existence of
it. Are you fine?
It doesn't really go very far. It does is sort of the Scots in it is sort of differentially fragmented, if you know what I mean. No two people speak the same way.
Has that to do with the writers or to do with the actors, do you think?
I haven't been on the set, so I don't really know that. I suspect that some of the members of the cast, they sort of bring their own experience to the part, and that there is a certain amount of flexibility in the direction and allowing people to say things which sound natural to them. Maybe not, if you've seen it yourself, you'll notice there is one character who comes from Aberdeen, and she comes out with characteristically northeast phrases like Happy New Year, Aberdeen, sort of. When an actor is saying something which is completely natural to him or her, it has a. To me, it has an extra impact, anyway. Mm-hmm. It's sort of transcends acting.
More authentic. Looking at the Scottish Parliament website, it's kind of immediately the first thing you notice, really, or I noticed anyway, was the fact that they have their guide to the Parliament in Scots. Do you think that's a political choice, or is it tokenism, or is it a step in the right direction? There's very little in Scots.
I have reservations about trying to undo 400 years of representation of Scots in education as being something which is incorrect, and suddenly using it for official documents, because that is can't be done overnight. And I don't think myself, though some people might disagree with this, that it would necessarily be a good idea to sort of rename all the public lavatories in the new Parliament building as shunkies, cludges and duffies. I don't think that this would necessarily be a good idea. It's putting the cart before the horse. The basic problem is an educational one. It's the way that Scots is represented in school and in public life. That has to be altered before we can hope for any improvement. In fact, it could be counterproductive to sort of start off by renaming public lavatories, because it then immediately associates Scots with lavatorial humour. Not that there is anything inherently wrong with these words, but it's not a very wise policy. I think the place to start is in education and with broadcasting. It seemed to be quite absurd that we should not get drama in Scots from the BBC, apart from the likes of River City. There is a place for that, but there are so many fine plays that have been written in Scots that could be produced. Well, for a long time there was a prejudice against producing the likes of Macbeth in anything but a rather far back English accent. I think some years ago there was a version of Macbeth which was produced with actors with a Scots accent, and Orson Welles actually made a film of Macbeth after all the plays supposed to have taken place in Scotland, and it seemed to be quite natural to me. Ideally, I suppose, it can be representationally, it would need to be produced in Old Gaelic. But, of course, Macbeth would certainly have spoken Gaelic most of the time. But at least to produce it in a Scots accent, at least labels it as belonging to the Scottish scene. To produce it in Scots is carrying that process a stage further. I don't think that the drama has necessarily got to be completely representational, but the idea that Macbeth should be produced in what one would regard as a sort of very affected type of English accent, it doesn't seem to bear examination somehow.